Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Hi, everyone. My name is Chris Cousins, and I'm the founder of Sports Recruiting USA. And welcome back to another episode of the Inside College Soccer Podcast. This time, we've pulled an episode that we've never released, actually. It's Mike Avery, one of the most respected people in college soccer. He was interviewed by my colleague, Don Williams. Oh, it must be, I think it was May 2020, during the first sort of COVID situation going on. So we haven't released it, but we were just like, why haven't we released it? So because we're on the podcast row this week at the United Soccer Coaches Convention in Kansas City, we recorded a lot of stuff this week for the podcast. We thought, right, let's just start getting a few out. So we had one the other day with Erica with the strength and conditioning type stuff. And then, yeah, this here is a bit more, I don't know what the subject is, but it's just a lot of information for people to take in from players to coaches to parents and just anybody in general. It's a really good listen. Mike articulates really well, a lot better than me. He's very, very knowledgeable. Like I say, he's one of the most respected people in the game. I'll kind of pass over, but yeah, just give you a heads up. It goes kind of straight into it. Like I say, we were hosting this on somebody else's podcast, so we pulled the audio. So yeah, if that's why it kind of abruptly enters, you'll know why. And if you keep hearing another voice, that's the other presenter. So cool. I hope you enjoy it. If you've got any questions or anything like that, you know where we are. We're on social media everywhere. Just type in SRUSA or Sports Recruiting USA. If you want to leave us some feedback on our podcast, we've had quite a few people, which we'll share soon, leaving ratings and kind of comments. It's been really, really nice to see that. And the episode numbers keep going up and up and up and up every time we release them. So we're glad you enjoyed them. So that's it. Enough of me. This is the Inside College Soccer Podcast. And with my colleague, Don Williams, interviewing, well, he's my colleague as well, I guess. He's part of the team. And that's Mike Avery. Thanks very much.
Hey, welcome everybody from sunny California. I'm really excited about what we're going to talk about today with you guys. So for those of you that don't know us, we're Sports Recruiting USA. We're an invitation-only scouting agency with locations all over the world. We have scouts in almost every continent of the world and most major cities, and we're looking for players that want to go on and play in college and have the capability to do so, and then we connect them with college coaches that we've coached with. One of the college coaches that we've coached with in placing players and in the past and had a really good relationship with this, and he's on staff with us now, is Mike Avery. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good, Don. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, brother. And you're located where? I know, but just so the world knows, where
are you? Yeah, I'm in the Vale of Paradise right now, Valparaiso, Indiana, just outside of Chicago.
What were you doing at Valparaiso? What brought you there?
Yeah, I was the head coach for the Valparaiso men's team for the last 13 years. So their Division I program that plays in the Missouri Valley Conference. We were one of those programs, unfortunately, that got cut, though. So in November, the program was eliminated. But my wife is the volleyball coach on campus at Valparaiso. I have two kids that are happy and healthy. And so we're doing some other things, but still doing it from here.
Right. One of those other things was what? What's the little project that got put on hold there for a little while?
Yeah, so I wanted to stay in coaching. And so I had an opportunity to jump on board with Fort Wayne FC, which is a new professional organization. They're going to start playing in the NPSL first and then move their way up the professional ladder as they kind of get their feet underneath them. But like many others, the pandemic got in the way of that first season. So our first game should have been this Saturday. And instead, we're on hold. So,
all right. So we're all in the wait and see mode on that end. Okay. So somewhere in the middle there, we connected, right? And, and you know, we had known about each other and we kind of lived in each other's worlds, but it was one of those things where we never met. It was like, yeah, I met Bobby Clark, I don't know, 20 years ago. And then you knew him. And then through them, well, anybody that knows Bobby knows that everybody knows Bobby because he makes everybody feel like family, right?
Sure. Yeah, he's great. I had the great fortune of working on his staff at Notre Dame for about 6 years. And he's as good as that gets, not only as a coach, but as a human being. He's
just as a human being. That's the cool part. He does things for people that it's like, why would he do that?
Yeah.
It's like, because it was just a phone call is his answer. Look, it's just a phone call. It's just an email. What's the big deal? It helps somebody. He's all in. I love that man.
He's like I said, I learned the basketball coach, Coach Bray at Notre Dame once said that he worked at Duke for Coach K. And he said it was like getting a PhD in coaching. And that's very much how I felt when I was on staff at Notre Dame. It was like getting your PhD in coaching. He was just so good. And then I had a chance to go from Notre Dame to work at Louisville for Ken Lola. So another coach, equally successful, who does it totally differently, yet has the same principles in terms of how they treat people. So I was really fortunate in that regard.
I think I asked you this before, but was Aaron Clapham there when you were there?
He came right when I left. So he was in the recruiting mix when I left to go to Valpo.
He was my son's roommate in college.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So they both played for BJ Craig before he took off back to Notre Dame and then over to Oregon State now.
Eventually. That's right. Yeah. So BJ came into Louisville when I left Louisville. So BJ and I are kind of intertwined as well.
Yeah. Isn't that cool? And that's, by the way, the whole connection's because of Bob. It's because Bobby was recruiting my son coming out of England. And my son contacted Bobby and said, and Bobby says, look, we love you. We think you'll probably play for us, but I got no money for a goalkeeper. And I told my son, well, it's 56 grand and you're not paying 65. It's not happening. Don't have that kind of money. And so he makes a phone call to BJ and BJ goes, yeah, I'll take him. Sight unseen, no video, largest scholarship on the team. Mm. So, but it turned out he was worth it. I mean, he worked his number 25 in the country at one point in the rankings, all that for goalkeepers D1. He did his job, but bottom line is that was all because of Bobby Clark. Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
And your son had something to do with it too. So,
But a man just shaking another man's hand. Cause believe me, I had never heard of Loretto, Pennsylvania. What is it? 750 people when school's not in session. I'd never heard of it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but he's lucky because BJ is another great coach and he's doing a really good job at Oregon State.
Oh, he loved it. And then he got lucky because he got Casper after that.
That's right. Yeah, And then Michael's at Georgetown now with Brian, who I worked with at Notre Dame. So it's this big kind of collection of people. So
crazy. Well, this isn't – I love the catch-up, and it's fun to tell the stories, right, of how the soccer world's all interconnected and everything. But let's get to it, brother.
Yeah.
One of the things that you do better than almost any coach that I know, because you've studied it, because you've paid attention, and that's, you know, human behavior and, you know, how people interact with each other. And, you know, as a result, what makes a better player, right? Psychologically, what's the difference? Because at the end of the day, you and I can probably both agree on this. They can all kick a ball. They can all dribble a ball. They can all receive a ball. They can all run. They can all head a ball. They can all find that. Yes, they're very good soccer players. That's great, right? But what makes the person that takes it from there to I'm a pro is like jumping the Grand Canyon, and it's all in the mental area.
Yeah, right? 100%. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I've been very fortunate even in the last 13 years at Valpo. I think we had about 15 guys that made it to the professional level at some level, whether it's USL or overseas or MLS. I think we had 4 guys drafted into the MLS. And so you watch these players that have come up they've climbed up the hierarchy, up the pyramid, and they're in the top echelon of college soccer. And then they're going to make the jump to the pro game. And almost inevitably it's not the player that you thought, oh, he's going to be a pro. It's usually somebody else. And usually what differentiates that player from everybody else, because you said it, they all have talent, some natural soccer, physical, athletic abilities. It's their mindset. It's their attitude. It's their approach to the game. It's the psychology of it. It's the mental side of it. You know, I was listening to a podcast this morning, and they were saying that 80%, I'm not a scientist, so I'm not trying to proclaim to be one, but I have a lot of practical knowledge in it. But they said that 80% of success at that level comes from the mental game. It's amazing, right? And you'll hire a personal trainer, you'll hire a private coach, you'll hire an academic tutor, but really the question is, what are you doing to train your brain? How are you preparing your psychology so that when you go to the next level, you can be the one guy or the girl that succeeds, that excels?
So it's really funny because the first relationship, so when I first came on board with this whole thing, Mike, I said, I want to bring more than just college placement. This is so much more than that. This is, I can affect that young person's life in a way that, yes, maybe they'll get there eventually, but I can help speed up that education process by putting them in front of the right people. Because look, I'm no Dan Abrahams. I know Dan Abrahams, to quote the old joke, right? And I'm no Dan Abrahams. But here's what I was smart enough to know is I said, I want to partner with that dude. I want to partner with Dan Abrahams because I think he's one of the best five in the world, in the soccer world, at least one of the best five in the world, and maybe, arguably, maybe the best in the world at what he does, helping youth players make it from this level to that level. Take that little jump step forward, at least being the best soccer player they could possibly have been because they gave themselves every little piece that they could give. And the mental part of the game is so big, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. And there's so many great resources available to us now.
Oh, so many.
You know, you can go online and listen and watch and read and so many things that I didn't have when I was trying to play.
That's right. Right?
Or even as a coach in the last, you know, 5 years, the science has really come into play and changed how we even view the game as a coach. I always get a kick out of it. So when I started playing and then got into coaching, I'm 51 years old. I've been on a team every day of my life since I was four. So that's 47 years of soccer teams every single day of my life. It's a lot of teams. Some of them have been good. Some of them not so good. That's a youth player, a high school player, a college player, a professional player. And then the last 30 years as a college coach and now as a professional coach. So it's a lot of teams, a lot of different landscapes and experiences. And it's just amazing to me how the game has changed. It's stayed the same in some ways, but how it's changed. If I had told a player 10 years ago we were going to go do a yoga class, they would have laughed you out of the room, right?
Yeah.
And now every team from, you know, United to the La Liga to wherever you want to go around the world, they all employ coaches in yoga. It's part and parcel of what they do as professional athletes. This is the same thing with the mind game. You know, my wife, I told you, she's the Division I volleyball coach. And I just this morning, she was listening. I walked into the room and she had a podcast on. The Division I Big Ten head coach was talking about mindset and how they've hired a mindfulness coach at their program. This is going on in sports everywhere. It's part of the game. So our young athletes that are listening maybe today have a chance to dig into it early.
Yeah, no, I dig it. I really do. In fact, my last couple of years of college coaching, I was really got into that, the mindfulness piece. And I was getting, my kids were meditating and they're doing yoga. Some of them rebelled like heck, but I tell you what, I had them write papers at the end of the year, what they thought of it. And a lot of them says life changing.
Yeah.
Absolute life changing. And all these bits and pieces.
Doing some work for the last 4 months with a company called Equilibrium Sports.
They do
personality diversity technology. So they take our personality tendencies and teach us how not to react out of our personality, but to respond out of our character. It's really fascinating. Changed me already as a coach. I can't wait to get onto the field again and employ this stuff with my players. But it just changes me as a person, but really to slow down, be thoughtful, and to make decisions based on my character, not reactions out of my personality. It's really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, that's life-changing stuff, brother. And what I was going to say is the one thing, you know, you take the kind of thing that Dan does, which is a different bit of piece, but I can see, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I can see that what you're doing comes directly out of your experience of coaching, which is something like Dan doesn't have, right? He'd be the first one to say, look, I've never been a coach at a level where if I don't win, I'm fired.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to be a college coach and to be at a 10-year, you know, I took the coward's way out, right? I went to a tenure track junior college. And in some way, you can joke that that's the coward's way out, because if you just do what you want to do, what they want you to do, you'll have a job forever, whether you win or not. But to coach at the level you've coached at, it's like, oh yeah, no, clearly if we don't make it in the finals of our conference playoff this year, we're fired. Yeah. They've had enough of it. They want to win, right?
Yeah. I mean, you're trying to win, but you're also trying to help develop people, right?
That's the dual-sidedness of it. But your wife does not want to pick up town and move, and your kids don't want to move school, and you love the community you're at, and you get that one bit of pressure. I mean, you've coached at that level.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the things that I think is really been intriguing for me, and almost every coach around the world right now. This pandemic has forced you to push pause, right? You've had to slow down, right? And as you slow down and you think about things, you reflect, you have time to go back into some deep diving of what you're doing. I'll be a much better coach now because of the slowdown, because I've really thought about how can I do it better. Before, you're always worried about what's next and what's the next tournament, what's the next event, who's the next recruit, what's the next game. And it gets going so fast that you don't catch your breath. And so you don't grow. You know what I mean? You just keep going forward and doing what you've always done. This has given us an opportunity. So if there's a silver lining in what has otherwise been a horrible situation for everybody, it's that we have had some time to slow down and reflect a little bit.
I love it. So let me get to some of the questions that I have, but I could riff with you all day long on this stuff. I love it. So most people, unless they've been to coaching school, don't really understand that, you know, they've never thought about the game of soccer in this way, that there are four foundations of the game. You know, we have the physical, and I've been having arguments about people that actually want to tell me, Mike, that given the fact that one player is built like Ronaldo and can play like Ronaldo, and another player is built like Messi and can play like Messi, if we don't know yet the end of their career, right? We don't know where it's going. That 90% of us probably go, Ronaldo, Messi, yeah, I'll take Ronaldo. If we're playing pick a side, like choose the stud, choose what looks like a stud and can play, we go, I'll take Ronaldo. And Messi gets picked maybe second or third if we're going choose a side, right?
Right, yeah.
We want 6'1" monsters who have 37-inch verticals and they can run 4.4 40s, but can also play soccer. That's what we want. Fact is, we get one of those once in a generation, so okay.
Yeah.
Most of us are dealing with kids. It has to be give and take. And the one area out of the physical, technical, tactical, and psychosocial that we kind of tend to ignore is the psychosocial bit, right? Because it's not tactile, right? I can get players pinging a ball, that's great. You know, I can get them in these shapes and get them countering and doing all kinds. That's great. It's not that hard. I make it sound easier, but it is. It's not that hard. You just have to understand how the bits and pieces go together, but it's nothing more than being a chess master, right? We're just learning how this whole thing goes together technically and tactically, but we ignore the psychosocial, don't we?
Yeah.
They give it about a half an hour in all of my licensing. It's like somebody comes in from the national team, talks to you for 1 hour, and they go, okay, that's the psych bit. Now back to the other 90% of your licensing, which is on the field. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. I think they're getting better at it. I think, you know, again, we're all
learning.
I'm not
knocking the Federation, by the way.
I think we're all learning as we go. I mean, it's really been about a 15-year of research now that's coming to bear with what's going on in the brain and how it applies to the things that we're doing. I think they used to think motivation was going in and giving you like a 10-minute speech that fires you up.
Right.
But what we're trying to do is develop resilience in our athletes, right? We're trying to develop this determination in them, right? So that they can, especially at the age that we're talking about, recruiting for colleges, there's so many things that are going to change in the next, you know, 3-4 years. Right? Some little guy's going to grow big and strong, right? And, you know, all these things are going to happen physically to these people at different speeds and different rates, especially on the boys' side. And so what we need to develop and help them to develop is this resilience, this mental framework of being positive as they go through the ups and downs that they're inevitably going to go through in this process. Because it's never linear. It's not just a straight line to the top, right? It's twisty and turny and up and down. the journey is different for everybody.
Yeah, I love it. No, it's true. So I was trying to think of what the most trite term is with regards to psychology. You know, like in the technical part, it's easy. It's got to be like, keep your head down, right? Every time the guy kicks the ball over the top, it's keep your head down. It's like, oh, shut up. It could be 1,000 other things than that, yeah. Right? It could be so many other technical, biomechanical things. What is that equivalent to this? And the only one I could come up with was good mentality. I want you to have a good mentality or a strong mentality. And then we let it go and go, okay, that was my sports psych talk, right? Could you think of, what's another phrase that you can think of that's like overused, trite when it comes to how we coach our players mentally?
Yeah, I do think that we throw the term around mental toughness a lot.
Oh, there you go. There
right?
you go. That's a good
one. You know, mentally tough. What does that mean? It could mean something different to you and something different to me.
Yeah.
And again, we're not creating little robots, right? We like passion. We like flair. We like personality. We like, you know, everybody brings something different to the table, the diversity of that, right? No, one of the beautiful things is that you might process the world differently than I do, and you're not wrong, and I'm not wrong, right? It's just, it's different, and we need each other. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, when we can blend that diversity together, that's when we really get some things going on within a team, right? And we can scale that to the world at large, right? So as we can start to recognize that each of us have different strengths, different gifts, different unique talents, and the different way of bringing those to bear, that's when we can really start to do some amazing things. So mental toughness, what does that mean exactly? Is it just a seriousness? Is it just, I don't know. You know, everybody's got a different approach to that.
And I'll tell you, and I will agree with you 1,000%, well, 999.9%. And the one little thing that I at least want to throw in there is, from a point of experience, at least for me at my age, I think that's important, that somebody isn't just spouting something because they heard their cousin say it, that they've actually experienced it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important because, you know, I mean, I talk to a lot of people in the industry, for example, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I can tell you everything about getting recruited in college because my child is playing Division III soccer. I know how it works. And I say, wait a minute, isn't that a little bit like saying, I had my appendix taken out, let me take yours out. It's like, there's so much more world to the world of college and professional soccer than people realize. So when people chime in about how this works, I think that it's got to be from a point of experience to some extent. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think there's the kind of the art and science of coaching, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I can read a book, that's the science of coaching, but how I then apply those things, the feel of it, the, you know, what situation for what circumstance to what piece of information I'm going to use, that's the art of coaching. And that's experience for sure.
And then so as coming from that perspective, what do you mean for a player when you say good mentality or come in with I want you in this mental state or framework when you arrive on campus, what advice are you giving to players?
Yeah, I think that when they're going into college, I think, again, this is a generalization, right? But almost all of them that make it to college, right? I mean, either way, there's a million high school seniors playing in the country. There's, you know, the percentage that's actually going to go play college soccer is pretty small, right? So you're a good player, regardless of what level you're playing at college soccer. You've been a good player. You're serious about it. You're passionate about it. You're going to go on to the next step. What I try and encourage these players to do when they get there, they're going to realize pretty quickly they're not maybe the best player anymore, right? You know, it's a process that they're going to go through, right? Sometimes you might walk in and be the best player from day one, but that's the outlier. That's not every other player. And so I think what they're trying to do is constantly balance optimism and ambition and then managing expectation at the same time. So if they can wrap their head around those two things, it's a strange balancing act, right? You've got to be confident, optimistic, have a positive approach to what you're going into. But at the same time, you've got to manage and maybe not lower, because lower is not really the right word, but have greater perspective on what your expectations are for the experience that you're going into. I mean, college soccer starts in August, hopefully, right? And so the first 2 months, 3 months of a 4-year relationship is your first season. You don't get any time to acclimate yourself. You jump right into a season, right? And so, you know, sometimes players go quickly to frustration because they were the best player where they came from, and all of a sudden they're not seeing as much time or any time even, right? And so how they handle that initial shock of all of these things, you're trying to figure out the campus, the team, how do you get to the dining hall? How do you find your books? You know, all of the stuff that's going on in college, home, away from home, probably for the first time for an extended period of time. There's just so many things that are going on while you're also playing your first season. And so it is probably not realistic to think I'm going to go in and just play every minute for 4 years from day one. Some people do, right? So again, that's the optimism. You might want to, but you have to also manage your expectations and understand that it's going to be a process. Look, it's a 4-year relationship. I've never been in a relationship that lasted that the best part of it was in the first 3 months, right? If we're going to go into a 4-year relationship, you've got to, you know, we're going to grow into this thing. And that's the same thing with your college soccer experience. You've got to, again, be doing all you can to prepare because you're optimistic and you have a positive approach to it. But you also got to be expectations-wise, understanding that my goal isn't maybe to play. If I do, it's a bonus. My goal is just to be the best teammate that I can be, help the team in any way that I can help. Maybe helping is by being on the field, but maybe it's not. And I still got to figure out how I'm going to help the team.
Yeah, you know, I love so much the direction that you've taken this, because I think that we don't talk about this stuff enough. And I think it's mostly because most of the people talking, again, have never been in those shoes of a coach. You know, you and I have seen how many different generations of types of kids growing up. I mean, it's incredible how we've seen, and we talk about it, there have been demonstrative changes in the behavior or in the acceptability of the relationship to coach old school style, mm-hmm. composed to what's happening now and how you have to be flexible. Now you have to change, and watching these kids change like that, it's insane. Some of the things that they're dealing with now that they're having a hard time dealing with it before, we just saw them kind of navigate. Have you noticed the same thing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you look at, you know, even the transfer portal, we can throw that term out, right? I didn't know what that was a few years ago. And then all of a sudden it's there. And now players are actually planning to go to a school that doesn't work out. I'll just transfer somewhere else. It's part of the path, right?
Yeah.
And again, the development of what I call resilience, like we're going to stick through these hard times because this is the right place for me. This is the right program for me. And I'm going to earn my way in, right? That's ultimately the kind of player that to me is mentally tough. That is a player that's tough. Not that I'm just going to take my ball and go find another team to play on. There's too many players like that are out there, right? You've done all this research. You've gone through all this long process. You've built all these relationships. And then the first sign of trouble, you're going to bail, right? That's interesting to me. That's an interesting dynamic to me. You've got to really dig in for the long haul and help. And again, I think as you manage your expectations before you get there and manage your parents' expectations and your friends' expectations and, you know, all of these other people that you somehow feel like you have to be beholden to, really, it's just about you finding your right fit. And when you do, you're willing to dig it out. And that's really the beauty of the whole process.
I love it. And I'm so glad you wrapped it up with that term, the right fit, because I think that's just such a important piece of this whole deal. Realistic, you know, I always say, this is the kid I will never help, Mike, ever. I want to be on the beach in California on a full ride, playing all 4 more years and winning 3 national titles. After that, I want to be at Barcelona. If you can do that for me, coach, I'll sign with you.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I don't want any part of that kid. It's like, that's not realistic. That's just crazy insanity on the one side, right?
Yeah.
On the one side of it. And it's just, all right, I just want to find home, because the reality is, I know doggone well I'm probably not good enough to play a professional or to make a living at it. I want to find the right home and contribute to something that's meaningful to me. And I'm getting a great education and it's affordable. Yeah. Right.
And you know, you say like, I'm not maybe good enough to be a pro. Well, who knows? Maybe you are. Maybe you just haven't got there yet. Right.
I don't know yet. And I'm not shutting that down, coach. I'm not shutting it down. I'm just saying.
Yeah. You'll never get there if you don't have the right optimism. Right. But you also never get there if you think it's going to happen today. Right. And so you've got to work at it. And so you got to find this, you know, when I was coaching in college and we would talk about recruiting, I'd start every single staff meeting with my staff about recruiting with FIT. And we used it as an acronym, FIT, find the ideal teammate. That's how we looked at recruiting.
I like it.
We want to find the ideal teammate. So what does an ideal teammate look like, right? They have to be good, right? But they also have to be someone that we want to spend our time around. You know what I mean? These are the kinds of people that will make you feel better about being in the team. That's the ideal teammate. They're giving and they're open. They're hardworking. They're committed. All of the things that are perfect in your world for a teammate. That's what I'm looking for as a coach. Right. And so if you're a player, then are you that player? Are you the ideal teammate? How do you handle it when things are tough? You know, that's part of this mental toughness idea and how it relates to you coming into a college program.
Yeah, and here's the cool part about America, at least as it stands as of today, there are so many different programs out there that I have seen a kid, and I'm having done what I've done for now so long, over 10 years, and that's placement, whether it was junior college or here, same thing. It's just like, you won't get along with that coach, but you'll probably get along with him. He goes there and he gets along with him, and it's like, okay, there you go. See, I just, you know, there was a player one time who we won't mention his name because you probably recruited him. He was the leading goal scorer in the country coming out of junior college. And I got a phone call from another coach I won't name in a school I won't name, but I would say it's one of the top 10 names in the country when you think soccer. And I said, coach, he isn't for you. And here's why. It's just not the right fit. And I told, and then I got a phone call to another school and it was like, no, right fit for you. Perfect. And they loved him. They still talk about that kid, right? Yeah. It's just, and I think that too many times parents get caught up in, I want to be at Syracuse, I want to be at Clemson, I want to be at Valparaiso, I want to be at Indiana. It's like, do you even know who that coach is? Do you know what his history is and his background? And this says you may or may not be the right fit, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of factors that go into this decision, right?
Yeah.
And it's probably the biggest decision that you've made in your entire life up to this point is where you're going to go to school, right? And I always tell everybody, like, who you become as an adult. I know this was true for me. It's probably more to do with who you hang out with during college than anything else in your life other than maybe your own immediate family. It's a big decision. You know, my best friends in the world are my teammates from college, and that was 30 years ago when I played in college. Right. And they're still my best friends in the world. And I played on about 8 years of teams after college. Still, my best friends were my teammates from college. There's something unique about that time, everybody that age going through the same things about the same time that bonds you in a way. Right. So if I'm going to become like you and you're going to become like me, shouldn't we really spend a lot of time making sure that we're the kind of people that we want to influence each other to be? Right. That's ultimately what this whole thing is about. You know,
100%.
You know, I went to my 25th reunion of my team. My senior year team went to the Final Four. And so we had a reunion and we spent, after 25 years, all like 20 of the guys were able to come back to Santa Barbara and we all hung out. It was wonderful. I don't think we talked about soccer once, not one time. We didn't talk about this game or that game. It's all about relationships. And so get around good people is my greatest piece of advice to everybody going through this, is get around good people. Because whatever your goals are, the good people are going to be the ones that help you get there.
Yeah, I agree. And I've used it. I don't know if I always agree with this phrase, but I used to use the phrase that you are going to be judged by who you hang around with. So even if you're not part of it, people are going to go, oh, those are the kids who smoke dope over there. They always smell a weed. They always come to class 10 minutes late. So that's who he hangs with. So even if you're not one of them, I think you're still hurting yourself in some degree. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think I've heard that before as well, that like if you take your five closest friends, you're somewhere in the middle of that,
right?
And so if you look at the qualities, characteristics, traits of those people that you consider to be your closest friends, you're probably somewhere right in the middle of that. So who you're hanging out with is a really, really important thing. And you carry that now with you in choosing a college. Who are you going to hang out with? That's why, you know, what's the culture of the team like away from the game? You know, when, on the weekends or on the road when the coach is gone, or, you know, in the summer, or all of these things. Are these the kind of people that you're trying to emulate? Because that's what you're going to become.
No, our best year coach of any college team that I ever had, it was led by a young man who was like 25 years old. He had already been in the Scottish Army, come back, and he just wanted to finish and go play NAIA and get his degree. He was just here to be sick, but he wanted to win. And so he would sit on the other kids and wouldn't let them drink. He would punish them. I'd walk into the gym and they're running. And why are you running? He goes, don't worry, coach, we got this. He was just like police. And it just became this culture where everybody just focused on football and grades. That was it. No screwing around, and they wouldn't let each other screw around. But that doesn't happen. And honestly, didn't happen because of me. That happened because I recruited the right kids who I thought would have that mentality. And I got lucky and they all had that mentality. But that's the cool part that I realized about recruiting is if you have this vision, it's not about you. It's about reading people correctly and then choosing the right kids and go, oh yeah, by the way, they can all play football pretty good too.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you start winning.
Yeah, I think too often we spend too much time looking at the stats of the team and the wins and the losses and not looking at the culture of the locker room. Because again, I think that's really, you know, I think it's probably the most important classroom that you'll ever step into in college is that locker room, because that's where you're going to learn so many things, good and bad possibly, but that's where you're going to learn so many things. And so I think really who are you spending your time around is such an important piece of this whole puzzle. That, you know, for me, I know that that's what we tried to look at as a coach is, are we, you know, if this is my family, right, and I'm the, you know, the de facto father of that family, the difference between that and my family is I get to choose who comes into it, right? And so as a recruiter, I want to be very careful about who we're bringing into it. But the same goes for the recruit. You've got to look around the room and say, what are these people really all about? And is that what I'm trying to be about too? Right? Because, you know, the reality is that every player changes the group, right? And in some way, they have some influence on the group, right?
Yeah. I used to tell them, look around you day one. Once we started playing, this is the one time in your life you will ever have this team. One, this is it. Don't take it for granted. Yeah, it's a rare thing and it's a cool thing. And sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle. But, you know, I always say, you know, winning a national championship is never really about who the best team is, because once you get to a certain level here in the country, yeah, on any given day, really, seriously, not a joke, on any given day, we can all beat each other. And we all know, so you got to, who doesn't get the wrong injury, who's, I mean, I've seen, you and I have seen weird things like, whose grandmother doesn't die in the middle of the season. And it's like, crap, now they're no good for four games. And I understand, I wouldn't be any good either. You know, I understand where they have to be. And I understand it's all those little things that people don't see, do they, coach?
No, you're right. I mean, there's, you always say that there's things that you control, right? They're right in your locus of control.
Yeah.
There's another ring of things that you influence that you don't really control, but you influence. And then there's things that are out of your hands, that are outside of that you don't control. And to win a championship and a team over the course of a season, all of those things have to go well, right? There's a lot of factors in there. So that's why you got to celebrate them when you win them, because they don't come all the time. And it doesn't always come to the best team.
It doesn't always. And that's the cool part. And I think that's kind of wrap this up, coach. What do you... Because I didn't stick to our script. Folks, we had a little script. I was going to go to it. Mike and I have kind of gone off, but I like the way it's gone here. I think it's important information that we don't often hear talked about, Mike. So what would be something you would want to leave any kid getting ready to go into college with? It's like, okay, if I could tell you one thing, this is something you can practice, or this is something you can do. This is something I recommend you do. What would that one thing be? And if you don't take anything else away from this, take this one piece away. What would that be?
Yeah, I think it's what I mentioned earlier on. It's balancing your ambition and optimism with expectation and really trying to find the right kind of balance between those two things, right? You want to work as hard as you can to do everything you can to be as successful as you can be. Everything in your control. You should be doing that now. You should be running. You should be lifting. You should be playing as much as you can, wherever you are, whatever the restrictions are, wherever you should be doing all the way up to the limit because someone else is, right? And then at the same time, you've got to define for yourself, like, what does success look like when I get there? Because if you're only saying it's been a good year if I played X number of games, you're really setting yourself up for something that's probably not realistic and not within your control. So again, for me, that when you're coming into any team, same with me as a coach, I go into, and I have a brand new team in Fort Wayne now of guys that are all going to be pros, right? I'm just trying to go in and help the team as much as I can. That's my whole idea. I just want to help the team the best that I can, whether it's with knowledge, whether it's with running training sessions, whether it's talking to ownership or sponsors, whatever I have to do, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and I'm just going to do it. I don't care who gets the credit. I don't care who plays, how many times you score goals you score or I score or he score. I don't care. I just want the team to do well. And so if you can go in with that kind of a mindset where that's your goal, but you're also preparing for the best that you can do, then you're going to find some things in there that are pretty good, I think.
Oh, coach, magic, absolute gold. I'm sitting there, I got notes on you now. It's just like being in a master class. So, by the way, before we go here, we're going to open this up to questions. But before I forget, if anybody's interested, anybody listening to this is interested in taking one of these master classes, Mike is available for speaking events. Am I right, Mike? Right?
Absolutely. You're available. Yeah.
We'll have a thing how to get a hold of you and other people hear this. We'll take care of that. And if you would like a guy like Mike Avery walking you through the whole college process and helping you get placed, he's got to like you first. So he's got to see some video and he's got to talk to you and your parents. But if you're interested, we'll have a way to get a hold of Mike because you're working with us now, right, Mike? You're helping us, right?
That's right. Yeah. Help yeah. Kids. We're looking forward to putting good players in the right places. That's really what we're trying to do.
Cool. So now any questions out there? Who's got a question? Somebody got one? Did one pop up there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm reading one here that talks about what resources are available or if there's resources we can recommend, right? I think it's Olivia that had wrote that in. It's a great question. Right?
Mental resources, is that your question, Olivia?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, sweet. Okay, you want to just state what that question is again because not everybody's maybe reading it. What's your question there?
I said, you've mentioned how important the mental aspect is in soccer. What resources can player access to strengthen their mental game if their club isn't really providing resources or incorporating mental strength into trainings?
Go, Mike.
Yeah, it's a great question. And look, there's so many out there. Like Google can really be your friend right now in terms of because you're at home and you're looking into it. But you can download an app right now. There's 100 of them that'll take you through meditation, mindfulness practice, just psychological training of positive self-talk. And, you know, what I've found, because there's so many of them out there that, you know, different kinds of people respond to different kinds of information. So some people like numbers and data and stats, right? That's not me. I like stories. You know what I mean? So I would rather listen to a podcast and somebody talking about a player and a story that resonates with me more. There's incredible books that you could read. You know, again, because I like stories, one of my favorite books, it's called The Leader Without a Title by Robin Sharma is his name. And it's a little fable. And it's, you know, it's like an hour read. It's wonderful. But it just talks about, you know, how everybody can have an important role and they don't have to be the captain or the star or the coach or whatever it is, right? So there's all these little things. So I think part of what you're going to do as you start to research it is kind of find information that speaks to you in the way that you like to be spoken to. Because again, there's so many great books out there that are written from an academic perspective, from a player's perspective. It's kind of up to you to figure out what speaks to you the most. But I would just start mental training for athletes. Google that and start from there. There's a million things to do.
Okay, thank you.
I love it. And hey, I'll also mention Dan Abraham's Soccer Academy. Google that one, see maybe if that's a good fit for you. It may not be exactly what you're looking for, but it might be. I don't know.
Sorry to interrupt here, Coach Don.
Go ahead.
Mr. Abrams is part of Global Soccer Development and was actually part of the call an hour before this. with different approaches and different things. So talking about making sure that the right people are connected, Mr. Avery nailed that. We try to make sure that the right people are holistically connected with the players all the way through.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, hey, any other questions? Did we miss a question? Did anybody see something?
Only question I have is, how do we get Mr. Avery's information? And I think the safest way to do that is to go through Don Williams and SRUSA. So that way we can get a nice pathway to Mr. Williams, onto Mr. Avery, to kind of decipher different athletes through the United States and make sure that we can put them in the right way. Because everything that I'm hearing here, Don, really, really, really like it. This is what we're trying to do in the United States with all individual players from all different clubs. We do understand that players are going to have to play for clubs in the United States, but we do feel that we can help out them in different individual ways and having people in Indiana in different spaces. Mr. Avery, we did want to say we wish you the very, very best. We have heard nothing but positive things about you, your family, and everything in that particular area. We've had many generations of players that have gone through to different places and have heard very, very good things. So I do know that you and your family are going to come out on the other side of this, and we hope that we can help in any way along that way. So God bless you and your family. Mr. Williams, thank you so much. I'm going to unmute the microphones. I expect the players to say a quick thank you or any words that they have for the staff. Thank you again, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.